Welcome to Between the Margins on CHRW 94.9 FM. I'm Michelle Boyce.
And I'm Gio Lakey.
Welcome back, Gio. It's been a couple of shows.
Yeah, it has. I've enjoyed a long recovery time from, I guess they decided a few of my internal organs needed to go. So, but I am back, and I am healed up and ready to rock.
Awesome. Great to have you back. And thanks to all of our guest hosts that filled in over the time for you.
Absolutely. They did a fabulous job.
Okay. And this show is about weight discrimination and fat advocacy and large people rights and however you want to word it.
Absolutely.
And some people call it our Juicy Squishy show. So... yeah,
that's what I called it. And it's a perfect week for it, too, because in the last 2 weeks, we've had this absolute maelstrom of activity relating to an incident between film director, writer Kevin Smith and Southwest Airlines. And I mean, it's been everywhere. People are blogging about it. It's been on the media. He's had his rants about it. They've had their rants about it. It's been everywhere.
You gotta love it when happenstance gives you content just when you're trying to plan a show. So thank you very much to the world and all of your, ironic, things that you just want to hurt people for no particular reason. It gives this show way too much content, and we wish we didn't have a show at all.
That's absolutely for sure. And it's actually been surprising, the number of negative feedback in regards to this issue. I mean, people are blogging, attacking and saying things about Kevin, his weight and his lifestyle, where most people would have that filter, unlike Mel Gibson, would have that filter that says, you know what, this really isn't appropriate.
Yeah, it seems that as soon as we talk about someone who is a little bit larger in size, all of a sudden people feel that, their health, their eating habits,
their lifestyle, everything
are all on the table. So we have guests today, a whole lineup. We have Jill Andrews from Toronto on the line with us. Hi, Jill.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There we are.
There we go. It was fun getting you on the line.
It was. Technology is always fun.
Yeah, especially around here. This board is complicated. Last week, we couldn't even get our guest on the board. So So we're really happy to have you here. And we've got Anna Kirkland and Natalie from Boise, Idaho, and Peggy Howell later on in the show. So, Jill, did you want to tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Why not? I have been calling myself a fat activist since about the age of 15 when I was called a fat effing cow on the public transit in Toronto. So at that point, I kind of learned that being a girl and taking up a lot of space wasn't something that was privileged in our society. So since then, I went on and armed myself with a ton of education, no pun intended, including women's studies and education. And I'm currently now pursuing my PhD in education at a Toronto university. So fat issues have always been very near and dear to my heart. Quite frankly, it gets me sick to my stomach when I see how people, particularly young people, are treated because of their weight or because of issues of difference. So when I heard about this show, I was so excited to be asked to be a guest.
Wonderful, and we're really happy to have you on here. And you're running some programs in Toronto. Can you tell us a little bit about those?
Well, this week we just ended our second series of Precious Bodies, Priceless Minds. And what that is a full-day summit targeted at youth between the ages of 12 and 19 to really discuss the issues, the societal issues that impact weight and that really make people of different sizes feel excluded rather than included. So we go through a barrage of stuff. We look at media, we look at films, we look at magazines, we analyze texts over blogs on Facebook, just even some of the comments that people had after the Kevin Smith case were pieces that we were able to take from and get learning from for these girls. So while the series runs with girls now exclusively, we are looking to branch off into including young men into that conversation because, quite frankly, weight discrimination, while it is somewhat gendered towards girls, we're seeing a huge increase in men starting to talk out, men who don't look like the, 1980 circa Arnold Schwarzenegger. They're starting to talk out and say, listen, I don't want to be judged by my bald head or my bulging stomach either. So this is really an epidemic, I think, of people feeling that they can take jabs at people who are fat or people who are differently able-bodied or people who are too dark or people who don't have the right hair texture. The list goes on and on. So besides Precious Bodies, Priceless Minds, I also run Curvy Catwalk, which is a plus-size fashion show where we really get down and dirty, have a lot of fun, celebrate some Canadian designers. Up and coming is where I really like to stretch it because, you know, really everybody else has all the glitz and glamour. It's time to give some of the people who are just coming up some shine. And in June, we're going to have Toronto's first ever international body image film and arts festival, which will be housed at our National Film Board, Toronto MediaTek offices. So it's an exciting time, and I'm really just happy to be able to be a facilitator, be an innovator, be a creator, you know, really raising awareness about fat activism. But besides that, I'm just really happy to get so much support from young people and from educators who really are on the ground floor doing the work and seeing the effects of weight discrimination on a daily basis.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. And back to the issue of youth and body image. Mm-hmm. I actually found a professor from Yale University who was talking about the fact that they, in their studies, have found that children watching television and television's portrayal of particularly women who are heavy set in standard typecast roles grow up to have a very negative opinion of people who are overweight. What is your opinion of what youth are finding is the main media message that's being communicated to them? How are they feeling about that?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, just talking to the groups of women that we spoke to yesterday at the event, or young girls, I should say, the main message that they are receiving is that fat is not in, and it is only in if you're casted as the best friend. You know, it's only in if you are the non-love interest in the sitcom, or if you're the butt of the jokes, or if it's somewhat of a PSA. For instance, if we're celebrating, you know, ending discrimination against fat month or week or whatnot, then you might see an influx of some shows that have a bit of diverse body size on them. But really, in terms of mainstream love interests or mainstream sitcoms, you don't really see shows that don't stress or aren't focused on the fact that the character is fat. So really, young girls are seeing that it's not cool to be fat. To be fat is directly a sign of your lack of control. It's directly a sign of your laziness, of your intellect or lack thereof. They're all of these stereotypes, right, that we attach to people who are fat, when in fact, some people who are fat can run up a flight of stairs, can do the treadmill, you know, eat less, are happier than those who fit the so-called Western ideal of beauty.
I can certainly understand that. I know I was kind of on the both sides of the coin when I was younger. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people who probably turned sideways and disappear. Now, not so much, but I am 10 times healthier because I do not think that just because I'm thin, I can sit on my butt and play video games all day. Right. I can stuff my face with donuts and it won't put a pound on me.
Right.
But I'm at a point now where I could probably run an hour on a treadmill and be a little bit sweaty but not out of breath, whereas before I couldn't come up a flight of stairs without being gasping. So I think people are construing the difference between weight and being healthy.
Yes.
But on that note, I have a question for you. In your opinion, do you think shows like The Biggest Loser are helpful or harmful?
I certainly do not think they're helpful. And I know I've gotten a lot of flack for that because a lot of people feel that they are because they're showing people going after their dreams and losing weight. But in my opinion, a show that lasts a season is not a realistic portrayal of how much work, how much hard work it takes to lose weight healthily. And that's my main concern. Not only are shows like these, you know, they are underpinned by jokes. You know, if you don't lose enough weight that week, your entire team berates you. You know, you haven't worked hard enough. You're a failure. But on top of that, who's helping these people for the next 10 years of their life? Or at least for the next 2 to 5 years of their life, where we know statistically weight comes back. If weight is not lost in a healthy way, you know, if you're pushing against your genetic blueprint, it's coming back. So sure, maybe you're a success on a TV show, but what are your successes for life? You know what I mean? So I don't feel that we're giving a realistic portrayal of the issues around weight. And that's another thing as well. These shows are not necessarily looking at the systemic ways that, fat people are discriminated. These shows aren't challenging the system to change. They aren't challenging bigger airplane seats. They aren't challenging bigger turnstiles in the public transit. They're not, you know, challenging bigger desks at schools. They're just telling fat people, guess what? If you want to fit into our world, lose weight fast, lose it hard, and show us that you've got some commitment.
Mm-hmm. It certainly isn't kind of an unrealistic expectation, because it's the same thing kind of with movie stars. I mean, yes, we could all be as beautiful as Jennifer Aniston if we had cosmetic surgery and a team of hair and makeup artists.
Exactly.
Kind of the same thing with The Biggest Loser. I mean, I'm sure I could look like a stick if I had a personal trainer who trained with me 24 hours a day and I lived in a house where your diet was controlled by chefs
Right. And I mean, let's also look at the class and the socioeconomic underpinnings here as well. The person who has the chef and, you know, the 10 beautification specialists, I think they're a little more wealthy than yourself and myself, just a little bit. So what that means is if the average Joe or Jane must be so obsessed with her or his looks, where else is their attention going then? Is it going towards education? Is it going towards being a strong communicator? Is it going towards putting themselves out there and networking and getting their dreams met? Not at all. You know, it becomes this attack on the self of, I can't do those other things until I look pretty enough. I can't do those other things until I'm handsome enough. So what happens when you hit against that wall enough and you don't meet those goals? You become a recluse. You know, you become someone who becomes a homebody. And then, of course, you know, 10 more tons of failure comes onto your shoulders. So it's a really ill-servicing cycle to set us up into thinking that by watching, you know, America's Next Top Model, this makeover, that makeover, what not to wear, all of these shows that are packaging the ideal look, for who exactly? And they're shoving it down our throats as the way we should be. And if we're not being that way, well, we're somehow... you know, we're a counter public, you know, we are counter against success. And that's just not reality at all.
Exactly. And that leads in perfectly to an interview that I did a little earlier with Anna from the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
Anna Kirkland. So can you tell me what your specialties are? And you have a book.
That's right. I am a women's studies professor at the University of Michigan, and my research area is in civil rights law generally. And I wrote a book called Fat Rights, which looks at weight discrimination as a way of understanding how we reason through deciding what people deserve out of the law, you know, who deserves protection and who doesn't. And it turns out weight is a really intriguing category to use to answer that question or think it through.
So we're doing a show about weight discrimination, and it's such a huge topic. We just did an interview with Natalie, who had problems on Southwest Airlines, and that gives us a background of the end effect of discrimination. But it starts way before somebody gets on an airline.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one thing for people to think about is that, I mean, a lot, we think of the discrimination happening, you know, in a place like an airline or a bus or some public place, you know, where a large person is and they receive discrimination. But what I found in my research is that a lot of people who are fat spend a great deal of time and energy censoring themselves and taking themselves out of public spaces to avoid humiliation that they imagine might occur. And so, you know, I talked to women who decades ago had been humiliated on public transportation and so would never take public transportation again. You know, I always think about all the innumerable ways that what we've lost in society is the freedom and capacities of all the fat people who have taken themselves out of those situations preemptively and aren't traveling and aren't working or working at home or self-employed or, you know, only drive and never take public transportation, all these kinds of things that really inhibit them in full equality as citizens.
And I've read some research about women, at least, being obese or larger women adding to the glass ceiling that we face.
Well, there is pretty well documented, especially among higher educated white women, they make about 30% less than their thinner counterpart when they're fat. And so, you know, it varies among demographic group, but the penalty just in terms of wages can be really, really high. The problem is that people are sorting themselves because of discrimination that they anticipate seething. So it has really deep effects even beyond discrete acts of discrimination.
So how do we fix this problem? Do we classify that as a disability? Will that help?
That's a really interesting question. Disability rights do offer a chance to get an accommodation when your body is different from the normal body or what's considered the normal body. So in that sense, disability rights are a lot better because, you know, fat people have bodies that are different. And, you know, if you take the classic anti-discrimination mode and say, well, we're just going to ignore the difference, then you don't get an accommodation. And so if what you really need is an accommodation, then you need something grounded in that kind of account of disability. Now, the problem is that when most people think of disability, they think, oh, this is a bad, stigmatized thing, and I don't want this identity. So, you know, in my research, I kept finding that fat acceptance advocates were reluctant to take on the disability label because they thought it would just be more stigmatizing. It's a tough one because the legal benefit is definitely there to get that accommodation angle, but the cultural meaning of disability is still seen as burdensome and limiting to fat identities. So as a practical matter, look, an airplane is a place of a public accommodation. A bus is a place of public accommodation. And people's, you know, it needs to fit people's bodies, not the other way around. That would really help.
We just need society to open its eyes.
Yeah, I mean, some specific things are really working against this. And one is that fat people are really bearing a lot of the resentment people have about rising healthcare costs. And so whenever that can continue to be, you know, this I don't want to pay for you kind of mentality, that's fairly destructive, but also pretty hard to work against. And
yeah, it's hard enough living with the social stigma without people talking about we're going to get rid of this as a problem. I mean, what kind of message does that send to the young women out there that are facing enough body image problems?
Yeah, I think just getting the idea that, you know, we're always going to have a range of sizes of people, and that doesn't necessarily have any, you know, has a very tenuous connection to their health, and we can do all kinds of things to maximize health and well-being and enjoyment and equality and equal opportunity and access, all those kinds of things, without trying to tell everyone that they have to have the same kind of body. That's what I would support, a message like that.
And all of these run on the assumption that society believes that obesity is your own fault. And the research comes out, you know, there's the DNA strand research proving that obesity is genetic, that there's reasons that people are larger people, and it's not that they just have fast food every day.
Yeah, I mean, I think what people always say is, well, look, it can't be genetic because we can't have a genetic epidemic. And so I think a good response to that is to think, well, in what ways, you know, why are we calling it an epidemic? I mean, an epidemic implies some, you know, really drastic, deadly thing that's happening on a really wide scale. And another way to think of the weight gain that we've experienced as a population is a pretty moderate rise for millions and millions of people, and then, you know, the very heaviest people putting on even more weight than that. So what it seems to be is that you're exactly right. We have a sort of basic program for what our body size is going to be, and research has pinned this down to something around about 70 or 80% of your weight is inherited, which is about the same as height, actually. So there's sort of a pre-programmed set, but then some people are much, much more likely to gain a lot of weight than others. And so you can have these population increases that are, for a lot of people, fairly moderate, you know, 15 pounds over 20 years or something like that. And then for some people who are programmed to gain lots of weight under pretty much any circumstances, those people are going to gain very large amounts of weight. So we are going to have some very big people and a lot of sort of moderately big people and some plump people, and then plenty of people who don't gain the weight under the same environment and the same conditions. So I think it's taking down the epidemic language a little bit that will help people see it more like that.
I mean, I know my ex-girlfriend, she was a larger woman, she was close to 300 pounds, but she had gotten cancer. And she was a model and, you know, in the normal beauty range until she got cancer. And then those drugs altered her metabolism. They altered her system.
Oh, yeah.
And when I was with her, she would spend weeks on end eating nothing but healthy salads and good food and nothing with carbs in it, and she would still gain weight.
Yeah, that's an excellent point about the drugs. I mean, I've looked into this, and it turns out, at least in the U.S., about 50 million Americans take drugs where weight gain is a known side effect. And many, many classes of antidepressants and other psychiatric or psychological medications have that as a side effect. You know, and to me, someone getting treated for depression and maybe putting on some weight as a side effect of the medication means an increase in health. Because, I mean, depression is a very serious illness, and people commit suicide when they're depressed. It's very, very serious, and a weight gain is certainly a great trade-off if you can restore someone's psychological health, but we don't tend to think of it that way. Just look around and don't associate those two things. And health trade-offs there might be kind of complex, or it could just be that the weight is really only an aesthetic problem. And what we're really freaking out about is a large-scale aesthetic problem for a lot of people.
We are all in this together, brothers and sisters, we can do better.
Welcome back to Between the Margins, and that clip you just heard was from Anna Kirkland. She's a professor at the University of Michigan and also the author of Fat Rights, Dilemmas and Difference of Personhood, which is available at most online bookstores.
And we're still talking with Jill Andrew.
And yes, hi.
Hi, and what do you think about that, Jill?
I am in worship. I completely agreed with everything Professor Kirkland had to say, particularly around the piece that she mentioned. You know, we talk about this fat epidemic. You know, we must, you know, nip fat in the bud, when really the epidemic is the societal views and the societal discrimination that's happening against those who are differently dispositioned.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, I think when we're talking about nutrition and we're talking about losing weight and those television shows that are promoting weight loss and all of these, there's a very, very, very large percentage of fat people that can't lose weight. And,
right.
And you know, they can not eat.
Right.
And they are not going to lose weight. And I think that's an important, you know, thing that society is missing.
It is. And, again, it goes back to the good old, you know, American myth of the pulling on your bootstraps and rising yourself up, right? And I mean, really, it's a Western thought of this neoliberalism, where the reality is try and try again and keep going. And if you don't succeed, it's your fault. You know, it's not genetic. It's not that the chips were against you too high in the first place. It's not that you look at the society and how it may discriminate. It's just that it's your fault if you can't make it.
And it's not the drugs that are keeping you alive.
Of course not.
And actually, that comes into a very deadly backlash, because those who are trying to chase the perfect body image and those who are trying to fit into this thin culture often end up with eating disorders. Now, I know you do a lot of work with Sheena's Place and some of the eating disorder information centers. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, Sheena's Place, I'll actually be back there in June doing a workshop around media awareness. Being fat, female, and fabulous is the title of the workshop. But most of Sheena's work is really around providing a safe space for survivors of and family and friends and allies of those who have had eating problems or are surviving with eating problems. And really the work is paramount, particularly because it does not receive government funding. So this is why raising public awareness is so important, because if we turn our backs, then who is there to help? Who is there to foster the voices that need to be heard around weight discrimination?
And we're running out of time, unfortunately, Jill, and I could talk to you all day about this, and unfortunately, an hour show is an hour show,
right.
and we've got so much content and so much stuff. If anyone wants to get in contact with you or see more about your programs, how do they do that?
They can contact me at bitemefilmfest.com. That's B-I-T-E, me, filmfest.com, and that's the Toronto International Body Image Film and Arts Festival. And, of course, they can also reach me at jillandrewmedia.com. And that's Jill Andrew with no S.
And that information will be available on our website, blog, and Facebook group as well, just in case you missed it the first time.
Thank you so very much for the opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for being our guest.
And next we have an interview that I did earlier with Peggy Howell, who runs NAFA, which is a fat advocacy group in California.
My name is Peggy Howell, and I'm the Public Relations Director for NAFA, which is the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance. We're a civil rights organization that fights the discrimination against people of size. We don't encourage people to get fat or even stay fat if they don't want to. We're just trying to protect their rights and make sure that they're not discriminated against.
And as your byline on your email says, discrimination, it's just wrong. We come in all sizes, understand it, support it, and accept it. I love that.
Good. Thank you. That is our motto.
And it's a wonderful one. So we're talking with Natalie about the Southwest Airlines fiasco, yes. I guess is about the best word we can use to describe that one.
Yes.
But there's more to this than airline seat.
You mean to the discrimination against people of size?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, in 2008, the Red Center at Yale University, an extensive study that shows that discrimination against people of size is now on par with discrimination based on gender and race. So it really is a very serious issue that it affects fat people in many areas of our lives, such as in the workplace, in healthcare, and even on the streets. Discrimination from family and friends as well. Sometimes well-meaning people, but not necessarily appropriately informed.
Exactly. And it's a skinny person's world, correct?
Yeah, it has become that. One of our members who is also a research scientist in this area, her name is Dr. Linda Bacon, and she's just a phenomenal woman. And she recently pointed out something very interesting to us, and that's something called thin privilege, which seems to be a growing situation in our society, particularly here in the United States. There are many, many privileges that shouldn't be afforded to just one group of people, but that are afforded only to those who are thin.
And what are some examples of those privileges?
Well, some examples are appropriate treatment by your healthcare provider. Many times fat people go to a doctor's appointment and the doctor doesn't even examine them or give them tests based on the symptoms that they're appearing with. They simply look at you and say, well, you need to go on a diet, lose 50 pounds and then come back to me and we'll talk.
Yeah, we hear that one way too many times with people that go into doctor's offices.
Absolutely. Another example, of course, is the airline seat situation where although airlines claim that they're concerned about the comfort and safety of all their passengers, I would say that they're only concerned about the comfort and safety of the passengers under 5'10 and weigh less than 160 pounds. That means the tall people, the people that are a little wide, people with disabilities, there's a whole range of customers whose comfort and safety they don't seem to be concerned about.
The irony of the whole airline seat argument, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not, but Canada has a one-person, one-fare policy.
Yes, I am.
And when you read the Canadian airline policies about people of size, they're completely different arguments. They're arguing that you need to prove that you have a disability before they will give you two seats.
Right. That's their way of getting around the government's law that was passed, that was instituted. One passenger, one fare. And their way of getting around it is to say that you have to have a doctor's notice saying that you're too wide in one seat, and actually providing them with some kind of drawing or some ridiculous thing I saw. And the doctors are really up at arms about it. Like, we don't have enough to do to be concerned about the health care of the nation. Now we have to measure our patient behinds in order to provide a document to the airlines. It's preposterous.
Which is just ironic, because the Southwest policy is if the armrests will go down, then you're fine. But if they won't go down, you have to buy two seats.
The problem with Southwest is that the enforcement of their policy is arbitrary, left up to the discretion of their employees, which means you might have somebody who is very understanding and just sees you for who you are and doesn't think that it's horrible to be fat, and so you get on and you fly. And then you go to catch your connecting flight, and there's a ticket agent there who is fat-phobic and who only sees a person with more weight than they have as being some kind of monster or some ridiculously out of control, and decide powers they've been given to treat that person badly and call them out of line, humiliate them in public, make a big issue of it, force them to buy a second seat, and it's discriminatory because it's arbitrary.
Exactly. But in Canada, they'll remove the armrests for you.
They remove them?
Yeah. If you read on Air Canada's site, they offer you chairs with armrests that will come up or removable armrests for your comfort so that you don't have that second seat.
Well, that's fabulous. Hey, let's all move to Canada.
So this issue always boils down to silly people that make assumptions. I mean, they make assumptions that a larger person is standing beside them, so they're lazy, they're not exercising, they spend too much time at fast food restaurants, which is a total crock. What do you say to those kind of people?
what I say to those people is that they are buying into the propaganda. Excuse me, but follow the money. Who gains to benefit from this sort of thing? I can tell you who gains to benefit from it. It's the pharmaceutical industry and the fitness industry and the diet industry. We have industries that have sprung up that are billion-dollar industries that did not even exist 20 years ago. So for those of you who really think that it's only a matter of pushing away from the table and moving a little more, you don't have a clue what you're talking about. There's a myriad of causes for people to gain weight, a myriad of reasons why we become the size that we become, and it's not simply cut and dry.
And the medical system really doesn't offer any help.
Well, do you realize that most doctors don't have a clue about nutrition at all?
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, I found that to be true. That's why they send you to nutritionists, because they really don't know. That's not really something that's part of what they study. Now, to me, that seems really crazy. Would you expect an automobile mechanic to not understand anything about the fuel that it takes to run that automobile or the oil that needs to go in to lubricate it? I would never take my car to be fixed by someone who doesn't know all there is to know about it. So how is it that doctors can look at our bodies and make decisions about what we need to do or not do? They don't have the knowledge that they need about what constitutes good nutrition, what kind of fuel our bodies need to have really to be healthy. I mean, rather than look at me and prescribing a pill for me to lose weight or a surgery to mutilate my body, how about talking about nutrition? Why not, instead of focusing on weight, focus on good health? What does it take to make me healthy? There are volumes of studies that are available from the research that's going on these days that show that people can be healthy and be above what is considered healthy weight. There's been three studies, one from our own CDC, one from Canada, and one from Japan within just the last few years, that have shown that the healthiest people are in that BMI range. I hate BMI. It's a terrible measure. But
so do I.
In the BMI range that is considered to be overweight. So the people that are 25 to 30 overweight BMI are the healthiest people of all. And the people that are in the category that's considered the healthy weight are not healthier and do not live longer than the people in the 25 to 30 BMI. So why is no one paying attention to the study? It's all about money, honey. Follow the money.
Well, that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? Oh, you're a riot, Peggy.
Thank you.
Oh, and you got to be proud of Natalie. I mean,
I'm totally proud of Natalie. I'm so proud of her being willing to speak up. She's a young woman, and, you know, she's not one of the old hardcore activists like me. And sometimes young women are not really wanting to be in the spotlight when they're carrying extra weight because of all the peer pressure out there. And I am so proud of her for being willing to step up and say, hey, this isn't right, and I'm going to take a stand too.
I don't think that anything's going to change until people like Kevin Smith and Natalie and yourself and others, you know, start becoming that squeaky wheel.
Yeah, well, I just got a phone call today from Dr. Phil's show. They want me to come on and talk about this.
It's unfortunate that unfortunate events have to happen before attention is drawn to a subject, but eventually, you know, you mess with the wrong person, and when you've got a stage and a microphone...
That's exactly the thing. I mean, you know, this sort of thing happens to fat people all the time. I have stories upon stories upon stories of friends and NAFA members who have experienced problems with the airline. And even though we do our best to try to raise awareness, it just seems to fall on deaf ears, and we've had no sympathy or not much in the past. I hate that it has to happen to anyone, but since it does, I really am grateful that it happened to Kevin, who has a platform, who is well known, who has 1.6 million followers on his Twitter, who isn't afraid to call a spade and say this is bullshit and it needs to change. I'm so glad that he was willing to speak out and not just take it, like so many of us do, over and over again. And it really has raised awareness of the situation to a much higher degree than ever before.
As we all are. Peggy, it's been a pleasure speaking to you. I know you've got to go to another appointment, so I'm really happy to have you on the show, and good luck with this fight in the future, and I think you might actually start making some good headway.
Well, great. Thank you very much, and feel free to call me anytime you would like to talk.
Okay, wonderful. I'm talking with Peggy Howell, who is the Public Relations Director of NAFA. Thanks, Peggy. And we're back, and I'm not sure if everybody's heard about the Kevin Smith and Southwest Airlines event.
It's been absolutely everywhere, but just as a recap.
Yeah, Kevin Smith was on a Southwest flight, and he had actually bought two seats for his own comfort. Nobody told him to. As he puts it, I have money and I want extra room. But he actually fits in one seat. And for those who have seen his picture, he has no problem putting the armrest down according to Southwest policy. But he was booted off a flight because he was too fat. And he twittered his fingers off in the waiting room and tweeted all over Southwest's Twitter account, and actually received an apology from Southwest moments later from their public awareness people, and offered $100.
Wow.
Wow.
Big payout there.
Big payout there.
I'm sure it's just a pocket change in his couch.
Yeah, and so they actually put him on another flight a little while later to continue his trip, one seat, just for the record, and they set another larger woman beside him who also fit into a seat, and her name was Natalie from Boise, and we have that interview coming up very shortly. But, you know, Natalie isn't all that large of a woman. Kevin Smith isn't all that large of a man. And it seems that this, you know, pick on the larger people thing. I mean, I know my fiance and the love of my life, she's a larger woman, and she's perfectly happy with herself, and she's perfectly healthy. But the social stigma about size and her situation gradually erodes at her personality, and I can actually see it eroding away at her, and that is absolutely ridiculous that people and society should be in a position where they can erode a person's self-esteem and self-worth regardless of anything, any physical attributes of their body.
Exactly. I mean, it's gotten to almost ridiculous proportions of what people feel is acceptable and appropriate to say. I mean, you really do have to have that filter. I mean, if you remove the word overweight and put in Jewish, if you put in Christian, if you put in gay, it wouldn't make it any more appropriate. So why do we feel with overweight people that this is absolutely socially acceptable, that this is the final frontier on which we're allowed to hate people and discriminate against people?
Well, it's not protected as a explicit ground in any human rights code. So, I mean, I think that is one of the problems that we have, and probably our next frontier to fix is, you know, if society can't actually get it together themselves, then maybe we need to start legislating it.
I agree.
So we've got that interview with Natalie and her opinions on Southwest Air and what happened to her. Now, you were traveling on a Southwest flight a little while ago and ran into problems, correct?
Right. That was pretty horrible. I've never experienced anything like that. I travel so much, literally, on Southwest Airlines. In the last 3 months, they have 15 flights for me that I've been on, and I've never had an issue with them or had any problems. The week before I was in Maui, I flew all the way there and back in coach and never had a problem. This flight, which wasn't full or anything like that, I had a horrible time. It was very embarrassing and humiliating.
I can imagine. I've faced a few of those situations myself in my life, and there's just really no way to describe how off guard they take you, right?
Right. Right, definitely. Especially on this, I could kind of understand or accept it a little bit better if there was a completely full flight and I was squishing somebody or something along those lines, but it was not a full flight. When I got on the airplane, the stewardess told me where to sit exactly, and they sat me in the front row right beside, well, not right beside, there was an empty seat in the middle and then beside another man. So I was not near anybody at all. And so when they came on there and asked me to get off the flight and told me I need to get another seat or change flight, I was just completely floored. And it was so embarrassing. Like, just in general, I think if anybody would be pulled off a plane, you think, oh, no, there's something wrong with that person, or they did something wrong. So that alone is just embarrassing. And have to be faced with, have to maybe get a different flight, or them telling you basically you're too fat to get on that flight. It's horrible. It's a horrible feeling.
I can't even imagine. Every eye must have been staring at you.
Yeah, especially being on the very front, and like, so you have to face everyone and you have to walk back on the plane. And the lady was very loud. She wasn't discreet at all about it. And so I just felt like I was, I don't know, I can't say a criminal, but I just felt like I did something completely wrong and that I was being, I can't even explain. It was just like they just put me on like parade, basically, and I felt every eye on me, and I just wanted to cry or just get off that flight and away from anybody.
I've seen your pictures, and you're not all that large of a woman.
Thank you.
You're already sitting on the plane, and I assume you were fitting just fine in the seat you were sitting on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at the time when they had come over to me, I had the armrest had already been put up, so I had the armrest up. And when I was in the terminal talking with the woman, and she was telling me that I'm occupying two seats, and I was like, no, I'm not. And if you need me to put the armrest down, because Southwest, that's kind of like their limit. It's like you have to be able to put the armrest down and sit comfortably with somebody beside you. Like, you're never going to be comfortable on a flight, but you can't be on top of them. And I was like, I can put that down. Like, it's not a problem. I think it's silly that you're going to make me put it down when there's nobody sitting between us. But that's not an issue. And I fly them, like, every other week or every 3 weeks. And I've been on full flights where there's somebody sitting right next to me. I've been on flights where I have the whole row to myself. And I've never had an issue ever.
I'm assuming that you don't feel that you're making anyone uncomfortable sitting beside you?
No, definitely not. Like, I mean, just being a big girl in general, you kind of try to plan ahead everything and make sure that you're not going to disturb somebody because you don't want to bring attention to yourself. And for me, just being plus size and knowing that I'm going to be in a small area anyway, like, I'm going to cuddle as close as I can to that window because I don't want to touch the person because they already have prejudgment that, oh my gosh, like, I'm going to be squished sitting beside somebody that's larger. So I try to make it as comfortable as I can with anyone, just because I wouldn't want to cause problems on anyone. So it was just humiliating.
Canada has a different rule, and I want to tell you about it and get your opinion, because Canada has a one-person, one-fare policy. So that means that in Canada, an airline cannot charge you for two seats at any time if you're one person.
What do they do if they have somebody that can't fit in?
Then the airline has to leave an empty seat beside, and they eat the ticket.
They accommodate. I agree with that. I mean, with Southwest policy, they will make you purchase the ticket, but if the flight's not full, they will reimburse you. And I don't completely disagree with that, but what happens when you go there and you find out you have to buy another ticket and you can't afford it? So I think that your guys' law is great because you're accommodating the customer.
When was this incident?
This was actually Valentine's weekend. Yeah, it was Saturday the 13th, and it was like the last flight out of Oakland down to Burbank. And actually, like, I was really lucky because I know this happens quite often to people, and it's not lucky in some ways, but Kevin Smith, who's a very well-known filmmaker, he was on the flight with me, and I guess he had been kicked off a flight prior to the flight that he was on with me, and I had no idea who he was when I sat next to him. So he really made it known. He was very vocal about it through Twitter, and then it was all over the news media, but the news really only told half the story, and they really spun it in a way that was more like, hey, this is a wake-up call, you're fat, like, you need to lose weight, instead of like, hey, there's a problem. problem with the customer service or the way that we're treating people or handling things, and we need to fix that. I was lucky in some ways because I was able to meet so many people through that and actually have a platform. He gave me an opportunity through that. But normally, I think that people do go through this, and you can't tell anybody about it. You're embarrassed, for one. And second, even if you tell people, like, it's not going to change anything. And being able to talk to you or being able to do the podcast with Kevin Smith, and I've done a couple other interviews, I really hope out of that, like, this can change something, because something needs to be done.
And change doesn't happen by being silent. And I'm really proud of you, because a couple of weeks ago, you were just a mom doing her job, and you've turned this incident into a public platform, speaking out about the issues, and that makes you your own kind of hero.
Well, thank you very much, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to be able to talk to you, and also Kevin Smith, too, having him let me, like, have my voice out there so you could hear me, too, and stuff, because I honestly, when I first found out, and then I found out that Kevin Smith was somebody, because I talked to him on the plane, and at that point, I didn't really know who he was, and we didn't exchange names, we just kind of talked, and he's like, told me, oh, man, I just got kicked off a flight, too, and I could tell he was humiliated, too, just, and he was sad, like, his eyes, and I was crying, so, like, obviously, you know, I was, like, distraught. And he's like, you know what, girl, don't even worry about it. We got this. Like, something's going to be done. Like, I'm going to make sure of it. And the next day, like, seeing it all over the news, I was like, wow, he was right. Like, it felt really great to actually have somebody, like, go through and not be silent. But when I first saw that, I can honestly say I was a little scared because I was worried my family was going to see it. And then I was like, oh, I hope I don't embarrass them and stuff, because I'm the only large person in my family. Like, my whole family's pretty skinny. And so I'm like, they're going to be so embarrassed because I'm too fat to fly now. And then when I got out there and I was, you know, I thought about it, and it's like, really, this is horrible. This is not right what happened to me. And it's not right to let anybody else go through that. And to hear all these stories from everybody else, it just broke my heart, and it made me want to just talk more and really push to kind of help other people not have to go through this and change something. And really, the Southwest Airlines has been pretty cool, like talking with Lisa from them. She wants to have ideas for anything that she can do to change the policy. So just knowing that they're open to that is good also. And knowing that there's people like you that are pushing to have, like, legislation or just having a voice out there so it's not silent is great.
What would you say to all of those larger people out there that are, you know, obviously this news and the breaking story and all of the press has two sides of the coin, right? I mean, it has the positive side that the press attacks a topic and it has the ability to change, but it has the negative effect, and that is that people that are affected until that change happens live in fear. What advice would you have to those people?
My advice would be, don't be scared. Like, don't have fear. Let that fear take over, turn it into something positive, and write a letter, and don't be quiet about it. Call the airlines, write the airlines, tell them, I'm scared to fly your airline because I'm scared you're going to humiliate me. And push for something, because we cannot just sit here and let this happen, because it's not going to change anything if we just kind of say, oh, it's embarrassing, or whatever, it just happened, I just want to forget about it. Like, if you want a change, the only way we can do that is to actually stand up and try to change, because if each one of us do that, there's going to be enough of us. There's 2 out of 3 people in the U.S., or I believe it was in the U.S., are overweight, are obese, and that's a lot of people. Yeah, I would say don't give up and don't be scared.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really, really happy that you're speaking out, and I mean, that's how we change the world, is one story at a time, pointing out these oppressions to the world and saying, hey, I'm a mom, I'm doing my job, I'm out there just being me, and, you know, why are you getting in my way?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and that's another thing is, like, I get that a lot. Sometimes people are, like, you're very confident, and you're, like, you don't really care, because some of your friends that are super thin, they're like, oh, I want to buy this out for 1,005 pounds. And I just believe that, you know what, today this is how you are, and you're going to have to live today as it is. And just go for it. You can't live in fear, because then you're going to wake up 6 years old and have a lot of regret.
You've been listening to Between the Margins here on CHRW 94.9 FM. We'd like to give thanks to our producer, Adam Prince, and our special guest, Jill Andrew of Jill Andrews Media, Professor Anna Kirkland, author of Fat Rights, Dilemmas, and Difference of Personhood, Peggy Howell, PR Director of NAFA, which is the National Association to Advance Fat Acceptance, and to Natalie from Boise, Idaho. For more information on today's show or schedule future shows, check out our website at www.betweenthemargins.ca. Or you can Twitter us at BTM Live or check out our blog at btmlive.blogspot.com. This has been Michelle Boyce and Gio Lakey. Have a great day.